This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, today, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us on the web at njrevolutionradio.com. And I have a Philly boy in the studio with me here today. I'd like to welcome Cody Lammy to the show. How are you doing today, Cody?
Hey, how's it going? I'm great. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Yeah, it's excellent to finally get a chance to meet you. We have a lot of friends in common, but we haven't actually met each other yet. So
no, and this has been long belated. We've been trying to pull this off for a while.
Well, we're all pretty busy on the left here. We all are trying to do 100 things at the same time.
Yep, that's the one thing you never have is free time.
Yeah, that's fairly accurate, I would say. So you're from Workers World Party in Philly, right?
Correct. Workers World Party, Philadelphia, and the International Action Center.
In the International Action Center, okay. So what is Workers' World Party for anyone who's not at all familiar with them?
So Workers' World Party is a communist party, is a Marxist-Leninist party. We were formed in 1959 by Sam Marcy, Deirdre Griswold, and a couple other comrades who came out of the Socialist Workers' Party. Our party is primarily an anti-imperialist party. We believe that imperialism is the primary contradiction facing the globally oppressed today. And if we can combat imperialism in any way, shape, or form, it gets us one step closer to socialist revolution here and socialist revolution in other places in the world.
And we'll get into imperialism and what that all entails a little bit later. But for people that have heard of a few different political parties, first off, do you guys have anybody on the ballot this year in November that people in Philly can vote for?
No, not this year. In California, though, we had John Parker ran for U.S. Senate.
Nice.
In the California primary. You know, we like to think of him as a winner because people voted for him, not because he got in office, but because he got his message out. We pushed the political consciousness in California to the left. And what's happening in California right now, major issues regarding immigration, secession from the United States is going to be a big thing coming up in the next couple of years on their ballot. So we do what we can to push the political consciousness, and that's really what it's all about. It's not about winning elections. It's about making statements.
Controlling the narrative, you know,
exactly.
Trying to get your word. And that's something that we've done in the Green Party, too, that, you know, it's a win if you can control what's being discussed at the debates and get your issues out there, because they never talk about the stuff that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. If the two corporate parties, you know, were the only ones in the debate, they would just talk about how great being a corporate party member is.
Exactly. And I'm not much of a voter, but anytime I see Green Party people on the ballot, I got to get out there. I got to do it, because you got to break up this two-party system. It's ridiculous.
Right. And we need to be less fractured on the left and, you know, support each other whenever we can.
Oh, sure.
So how would the Workers' World Party be different than somebody who may be familiar with the Socialist Party or Socialist Alternative or some of the other? What are your main things other than imperialism that you guys really differ? I mean, I think they are anti-imperialist parties as well.
Well, I mean, a lot of them is strategy. A lot of it is theory. A lot of it is we wanted to form ties with the international left in a way that other political parties in the United States don't do. We have ties to pretty much every major communist party in the world right now. I mean, what sets us apart isn't so much our want of revolution. It's a scientific theory that is formed by people elsewhere in the world, not by Americans, but by revolutionaries in the third world, in places that were the former Eastern Bloc, the Euro-Communist parties of the 1970s. We grew out of those movements, and we are sort of holding the torch, so to speak, for, you know, what was the global movement against colonialism in the 60s, 70s, and kind of waned away with the rise of neoliberalism in the 80s.
Yeah, unfortunately, people really do not like to talk about colonialism and how we are one of the main colonizers of the planet and are just exploiting the global South continuously for our own benefit.
Absolutely.
So what are you guys specifically working on in Philly there? What's your local chapter doing?
Well, in Philly, I mean, we've seen in the last, since the Trump election, it's everything has kind of gone topsy-turvy. And we've experienced this incredible period of growth, not just in Philly, but across the whole country of our party. In the 6 months following the Trump election, our party grew double in registered members. 6 months. It was the most ridiculous growth. I think none of us anticipated it. But that growth has come with incredible opportunities to bring in new, you know, exciting new ideas, fresh campaigns. We just started a campaign surrounding the opioid crisis here in Philadelphia and the closure of the so-called tent cities, open-air drug market, you know. But really what they are is homeless people sticking together and finding shelter and community in places that they really can't, you know, if they are just on their own. We're doing the BDS campaign right now surrounding the Philadelphia Orchestra. A lot of your viewers probably aren't aware, but the Philadelphia Orchestra just finished up a tour of Europe, a little bit of East or West Asia, and finally they ended in Israel, touring on 4 military bases in the state of Israel. And our campaign was about getting them to divest from any sort of financial entanglement with the state of Israel. And
all right, yeah, I'd like to dive a little bit more into what BDS is. BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, right? And yeah. You want to explain a little bit of what the movement is and the goals of the movement and what the gist of it all is?
I'll let you take that.
Okay, sure. That basically it's a saying that Israel is an apartheid state and they're engaging in ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. Palestinians have been driven off of their land and now they're just stuck in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. So the goals of BDS is equal rights for Palestinians, allowing the refugees to return to their homes, and ending the military regime in the West Bank and Gaza. Mm-hmm. So BDS is an effective tool in that you boycotts, you know, when you start hitting people in their pocketbooks in this capitalist world we live in, that that starts having some effective changes, as well as, you know, divesting money from them and putting international sanctions on them.
Absolutely.
And so
make apartheid unprofitable again.
Yes, I like that.
The slogan.
Good slogan. So, you know, there's corporations like SodaStream that operate out of Israel, or HP Computers, or yeah. I'm sure there's more I'm not thinking of right now.
Oh, there's too many. Too many to count.
And Sabra Hummus being one.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to realize a lot of your, you know, for your viewers, this BDS began in South Africa during their apartheid regime, and it was, you know, it was very effective in the eventual fall of apartheid in 1994. So knowing what we know and what we know from a lot of the destruction of several settler colonies in Africa, such as South Africa, Angola, Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe when it was still Rhodesia. Knowing what we know from those struggles, we can apply those to Israel and eventually bring down this ridiculous apartheid regime.
And I think it's important for people to understand this isn't about anti-Semitism. It's about basic human rights that the Palestinians are being denied. They're getting electricity for 4 hours a day. They, exactly. You know, their schools are being bombed, their buildings are being torn down, and Israel's still trying to expand and occupy territory that it should be Palestinian settlements as it is. So definitely nothing against Jewish people. It's against basic human rights violations. Mm-hmm.
It's against white supremacy is what it is. I mean, the state of Israel is a white supremacist state. I mean, the ethnic makeup of Israeli settlers are white, you know, white Jews from Europe who settled on indigenous land. What a lot of people don't know is there was a very large population of indigenous Mizrahi Jews that were already Palestinian prior to the formation of the State of Israel in 1948. And they had gotten along with Arab Palestinians and Muslim Palestinians for thousands of years with no problem until the settlers came.
And then once that happened, people were forced off their land. They now have lost the rights to go back to the land their families lived on for generations. Mm-hmm. And right of return is kind of one of the big goals of the BDS campaign, is that these refugees can get back onto the land that their families are from.
Absolutely.
And so you guys have been targeting the Philadelphia Orchestra. Did you get any notoriety or get that message out into any local media?
Not just the local media, because we had several articles, many op-eds by our my incredible comrade, Susan, who works not just with Workers' World Party, but several Palestinian rights organizations, a renowned author. We didn't just get picked up by the local press. We got picked up by the international press. We had Israeli publications in Israel slandering the name of Workers' World Party Philadelphia. And it felt, you know what, it felt a little good to see that we pissed them off that much.
Yeah, I always take perverse pleasure in pissing off the establishment, so much more than I should.
But originally, what we did try to do is we didn't try to go after the orchestra itself. We tried to go after the union that represents the players in the orchestra. We showed up to their meetings. We had several conversations with the union, and every single time we got the same answer. Oh, you know, the union doesn't get involved with it. You got to take this directly to the players themselves, because we cannot control their, you know, movement across international borders, blah, 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 all this shit. It was an excuse from the get-go. But, you know, this just goes to show you that there is a regressive labor movement in this country, and a lot of people don't want to admit it. But the fact that you are an organized laborer doesn't necessarily mean that you're radical or revolutionary or looking out for anyone besides yourself. There's a self-interested white supremacist movement.
Oh, yeah. And I think that unions could have such an important part in bringing about worker solidarity and standing together and building workers' rights. But you're absolutely right that being in a union does not necessarily make you automatically being progressive or standing for the right things. I know, no, when I'm going against pipelines being built in the forest, through the forest out here, they're sending the unions from the trade union members to stack the bleachers and testify so none of us can get our message out. And they're mm-hmm. being paid to be there, whereas we're taking off work to be there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely unions could have such an important part if they start working the betterment of society. They could be one of our most powerful allies.
And I think they will.
They have been in the past.
They have. They have, and I think they will be again. But, you know, I think we're just in this time period where we're sort of seeing this decline in neoliberalism and this rise of kind of a, I don't know what you would call it, a aristocratic populism, I guess. Sort of this well-off populism, this well-off labor populism. And it's sort of, you see this in the rise of Trump and Bernie. You know, they represented two sides of what was essentially the same coin. You had right-wing and left-wing well-paid labor that had agendas. And they were, you know, they rose above the needs of, you know, the genuinely downtrodden working class movement, the oppressed native people, black people, and migrant workers. You know, this incredible undocumented worker crisis we have in this country. And it's like, where is the political movement for them? Yeah, this is the largest growing working movement in the country. And it's like, where are they represented in mainstream politics? And that didn't happen in this election.
No, definitely not. I had heard somebody say, though, I forget who it was. It was a friend of mine, that once Trump got elected, we're all accelerationists now.
We don't have a choice.
So, you know, I may have not been an accelerationist a year and a half ago, but, you know, now it's kind of pushed up the schedule for establishing socialism in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's we have one choice to make, and, you know.
That's at times it's, you know, coming down to your capitalism or we all go extinct. You know, we've only got about 5 years to get off fossil fuels, and capitalism certainly is not going to provide those solutions for us.
We could have a whole discussion. We have a whole nother episode on that. I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my main focus that I do a lot of presentations about, since I'm an eco-socialist, of, you know, that how capitalism and exploiting and environmental colonialism is also a pretty
big deal. Oh, yeah.
I did want to get into what imperialism and colonialism is, in case anyone else isn't really aware of what they are or have heard the terms and didn't really understand them. Do you want to give a little brief history of imperialism? I know you could go on for a whole show about just describing that, but try to sum it up.
We do multiple episodes on this, but imperialism and colonialism are, well, let me start with imperialism. Imperialism is an often misused word. It's often, it's not a word that we put in the American political lexicon often because it's such a dirty, I was saying this before the show, it is such a dirty word. And liberals hate being slapped with the imperialist label because there's this entire culture industry of liberalism about so-called saving the third world through, you know, NGOs, military intervention, sanctions, and this sort of unseen war on the global south. But what imperialism is monopoly capitalism. You have capitalists in the first world who need to grow exponentially, and they've already sort of conquered their own national markets. They've cornered them. And as rate of profit falls, as Marx said, you need to dive into new markets. You know, you have to be able to sell your bullshit. And not only that, you have to be able to produce it at a lower cost now than you could in the past. So what do? Well, the industrial capitalist gets involved with the bank capitalist, the financial lender, and is like, listen, I need to build factories somewhere else. Will you lend me money so I can go to this, you know, say I need to go to Indonesia because I can, you know, you give me a bank loan at 10 times less than you would pay to start a business here in the United States. You could start that business in Indonesia and you could open up 10 more businesses because it doesn't matter. That's an untapped market. So financial capital and industrial capital merge, well, bank capital and industrial capital merge to create finance capital. That finance capital is exported to the third world. And what do we get back? We get cheap labor and cheap goods. And obviously the working class there are like, well, I don't understand. You know, I was fine before this, but now you've now closed off so many of my resources and now I have to work for 19 cents an hour. We don't really like that. I think we're going to put an end to that. So the finance capitalists, these imperialists, they need to put down these worker rebellions. And how do you do that? You introduce this concept of liberal democracy to these countries. You overthrow what was usually a very peaceful and prosperous government that's very considerate to its own national interests. That's now overthrown. And you install what's a good example? You know, your Sisi's of the world, your Erdogans, your Dutertes, who are like, come in, boys, you know, I'm going to, you know, you just take care of me, my brother Pedro, you set up shop, just, you know, make sure that me and my national elites are taken care of. I don't give a shit what happens to the working poor of my country, you know, so long as I'm taken care of. You get what you want. You can exploit our natural resources. You can exploit our working class, our women, our oppressed people. It doesn't matter as long as my bottom end is taken care of. And that class in the third world is called the comprador capitalist class. The comprador works with the finance capitalists in the first world and forms a global conspiracy. So that's basically what imperialism is. And the U.S. manages to maintain an imperialist empire through, you know, several means. It's not just military. Obviously, we've staged, I think, something like 55 foreign military interventions since World War II.
We do enjoy interventionist wars here in this
country. Yeah, we love them. We love them. And they're not called wars, even though they feel like wars for the working people of those nations. You know, when we sent right-wing paramilitary death squads into Guatemala, we didn't call that a war. I mean, obviously all the people, you know, the thousands of people who died in that conflict, they thought it was a war. But, you know, if you live in the United States, there's a good chance you never even heard about it. And again, right. This is all
definitely,
part of it.
You know, we don't like to use the word war. You know, no. We're just bringing democracy to the world.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And, you know, there's countless examples of this happening. And it doesn't just happen. And another thing is that it doesn't matter if your country is socialist or not, whether or not, you know, it's the U.S. will knock over your government. That's not necessarily the precondition here. It's just whenever any country, socialist or not, tries to put forth any sort of economic autonomy, the U.S. is in there with the CIA, with, you know, guns, tanks, drones, doesn't matter. I mean, you had interventions in Marxist-Leninist countries, you had interventions in the Christian socialist country of Nicaragua, in strong populist, nationalist, progressive governments such as Libya, Chile, and even right-wing governments like Iraq during the Saddam Hussein regime. Saddam Hussein was originally CIA. He was put in there by the CIA to put a stop on the Iraq Revolution of 1970 or 65. He allowed comprador capitalism to thrive in Iraq for a very long time until he realized that he was in a constant fight with both U.S. and his own national interests. He was getting fleeced on oil prices, so what did he do? He nationalized the oil industry, and he used that social surplus to put that into free education, free healthcare. Iraq had one of the best, prior to the invasion in 2003, Iraq had one of the highest living standards of any Middle Eastern country. And what happened almost immediately afterwards, you saw that plummet. You saw the privatization of oil. Right now, the oil industry in Iraq is owned by Exxon Mobil, BP, and Total. And so what happened was the invasion was incredibly successful in that regard, in doing exactly what it set out to do, which was to privatize Iraqi oil. And it didn't matter that Saddam was an ex-CIA spook. Like, you know, U.S. imperialism knows no bounds. It doesn't matter. Colonialism is a much more vague term. Colonialism goes back to the 14th, 15th century when the original settler colonies began popping up from, you know, the European colonialists, you know, the Dutch, the Spanish. It's a very vague term. It just means, you have several types of colonialism. You have settler colonialism, which was the original. Settlers would come to a country, begin establishing a chain of production where they would export raw goods. They would be sent back to, Spain, the Netherlands, England, where those would
basically
then
be robbing countries of their natural resources for basically whatever country sent their people there in the first place.
Exactly.
It's a fairly negative thing to think, you know. And then these countries can't utilize their own resources to develop themselves. And, you know, you've got people like Trump making presidents about the shithole countries. Well, we stole all their resources.
Exactly.
How are they going to develop into something if we take every single resource they have from them?
And then not just taking their resources, but then making them, you know, build cheap plastic crap for us using their resources from their country, manufactured in their country, sending them back to the first world for us to consume.
Yeah, and then dispose of.
And then dispose
of.
Crash
the planet.
And that's, yeah, of course.
So it really does all tie in together. So you guys are going to be starting an anti-imperialism campaign in Philly in the near future, right?
Oh yeah, no, it's kicking off. It's kicking off. We are putting together a serious project of attacking global imperialism. And one of the places that we really are kicking it off, because it's so relevant to what's happening right now, is this imperial aggression against Korea. And if you ever wanted more proof that the Democrats aren't better than the Republicans, but merely different. Look at this disgusting warmongering attitude that so many Senate Democrats, so many House Democrats have right now against these peace talks that Trump and Kim Jong-un are in the midst of right now.
It's like the very idea of a peace talk is offensive to them. Like, even if it fails, it's still better than war.
Yeah, diplomacy should always be your first option. But as we've seen in the last three decades, Democrats are now the party of war. And Republicans, through a weird alchemy of what's been going on, are now being pushed to being the party of peace. It's very bizarre, and we're living in this world.
Cats and dogs are living together. I don't understand.
That's hysteria.
So do you guys have any details of what you're going to start yet? Are you still in the planning phases?
Well, I mean, we are attacking, we're attacking imperialism on multiple fronts, but primarily right now it is Palestine, Korea, Cuba, you know, because the blockade is still, austerity policies against Cuba are still in place, and they have been since 1992. Thanks, Bill Clinton, for that one. And also Puerto Rico. This horrible devastation from Hurricane Maria and Irma, U.S. State Department fudging the numbers of the death toll. They said it was 75, 80 people. It was 5,000 people died in that hurricane. And the devastation has been ridiculous. The rich are now using this opportunity to rebuild the country it's a colony. It should be an independent country, and that's what it will be one day. But they're using this opportunity to rebuild Puerto Rico as a playground for the rich. There's now this ridiculous migration. It's basically a forced migration because the government does not want to support these people who lost their homes. These people are now being forced to migrate to the mainland, where they have no real organic connections. They're being pushed from one poverty situation to another, and it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and one of my previous interviews was talking about how it's a kind of, you know, Puerto Rico and Atlantic City are kind of in a very similar, you know, Atlantic City's been colonized.
Oh, yeah.
Just here locally, that, you know, they don't even control their own government anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not even just distant international things. It's happening right here in our own neighborhoods.
I was just in Atlantic City 2 weekends ago, and I'm thinking, how does this city with all this casino revenue, how is none of this touching the working class population? Like, what the hell is going on here that allows that to happen? And it's this ridiculously corrupt political system they have there.
Yeah, so, you know, it's great when anybody's working to change that, and there's a lot of people doing really good work. And if people want to get involved with your work in Philly, how can they reach out to you? Was there another meeting coming up, website, anything like that?
So one of the things that we do have coming up, and this is something really important, I want to plug this, June 22nd at the Arch Street United Methodist Church, we're going to be hosting we're going to be one of the co-hosts of a forum about the Cuban embargo, next steps that we can do as Americans to oppose austerity policies against the Cuban government. And, you know, really what we need to be doing here. I really would encourage your viewers to come out. Arch Street United Methodist Church, June 22nd. I believe it starts at 7 p.m. And hopefully we'll see some of you there. If you want to get involved with Workers' World Party, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We have both the pages of our national organization and also our local branch. Be sure to follow the local branch, Workers' World Party Philadelphia, on Facebook, to really keep up with what's happening in the region.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking. Time really kind of flew by here today.
It really did.
Wow. It really did.
I didn't think, you know, you think to yourself, wow, an hour? Can I talk for an hour? Of course I can.
Yeah, it really turns out we all can. Once you get something that you're passionate about, you can just keep going forever.
Heather, it's been an enormous pleasure, and thank you so much. I hope we can do this again.
Absolutely. You're welcome back for any other initiatives you guys are doing, or if you just want to chat more about socialism, you know, I'm always down for a good socialism chat.
Always.
My listeners, thank you for joining me today. If you like hearing these kinds of things, interviews, learning points of view you never knew anything about before, hearing about news stories that are not getting covered in mainstream media, we need your help here at New Jersey Revolution Radio. Go on our website, njrevolutionradio.com. Click on that donate button. You can also support us on Patreon. You can support us on PayPal. You know, help us not have to pay money to bring this news source to you. Anything you can do, even if it's just $2 a month, is really helpful. And thank you so much for joining me today. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.